You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
All right. I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay. All right, man. Do your thing. Here we go.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's me, Joe Thrashenkill, and you're listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. I'm joined today by my best friend in the world. Fuck everyone else. I'm talking, of course, about Brennicide. Brenna, how you doing?
Good, man. Fuck literally everybody else. Maybe one
everyone
person in particular.
Else. Yeah. But not saying any names, but fuck everyone else.
Right. Except everyone listening, right? Please don't go.
Oh, right. We like you guys. We like all 500 of you.
You're okay. Hey, dude, 500 is, like I said, it's think of 500 people at a show. That's a good show.
No, I mean, I can't believe that the same people keep listening to this show. I love it, personally. I don't understand it, but I love it.
It's just like that bar graph is a straight fucking line episode to episode.
Like,
just on the x-axis, just parallel to it.
If anything, the only thing that changes is if we get like a big guest on, way less people listen to us.
Go figure, right? Like if we ever have interviews, the people that usually listen just don't listen, and the artist never shares the interview ever. Fucking ever.
And like, I kind of get it. I listen back on some of these and I'm not like the best interviewer in the world. That's kind of sugarcoating it a bit. I'm not so good at talking to strange people. I feel much more comfortable talking to my bros, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, we don't have to do interviews anymore. Like, if it's not worth our time, then just it's all right. That's not what people listen anymore for anyway. If we can have like a fun guest over Skype or something, that's great. But I'm telling you, man, the times that me and Jordan have tried to like chase down people and tried to record something that's barely audible on our little like mobile recorders, it's just like, oh, it's fucking ridiculous. And people just blow us off and everything like that. So.
Yeah, I've had so many people, like, I set up all my shit, and I've got all my prepared materials, and then they just fucking never pick up the phone.
Well, because why should they?
Yeah, but, you know, that's okay. We don't need them. We don't need anybody. It's you and me against the world, buddy.
Yeah, Trevor, next time interview us, okay? Have him on the show for the eighth time.
Actually, yeah, people do like listening to the shows with Trevor. That's the one exception. People love Trevor.
He's a good dude. We'll have Trevor on maybe. But as far as anybody else, who knows? Who fucking knows? So let's take a look, man. I would figure that metal news would have kind of exploded after a lot of these COVID-19 restrictions. Have subsided just a bit. Shows, things like that, like band members performing in shows, getting up to their usual antics, but not really. It's still been pretty slow.
I think the tour machine takes some time to get launched, man. Like, you know, a lot of the bands that you and I like, they can just go out and play the, you know, VHF hall or Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW. They go to the fucking Bear Lodge.
If you think I'm editing any of that out, I'm not. I'm just going to leave that one in there.
And I'm trying here. Anyway, but the bigger bands, like, you know, you got to have all your staff. You got to, like, get all your fucking 18-wheelers filled with, you know, $30 t-shirts and shit. Like, it's a thing. It's a full thing. So, you know, it's been a while. They're grinding in the gear. They're trying to get there. And I keep seeing shows getting postponed, which is not a great sign for all of that.
Right. But now it's not just for like legal reasons or restrictions. It's just like logistical reasons. Nobody wants to work, and that includes roadies. So
I don't blame them. Like,
yeah. Have you been a roadie? Have you been a guy who just like went to hang out with your friend's band on a van once just to go to a show somewhere?
Like, I think maybe the greatest archetype of our era, you know, Jeff Lebowski, the Big Lebowski, you know, he said it himself. Like, for a while I roadied for Metallica. Those guys are assholes.
Yeah. It's just like a hard knock life, man. You don't really get paid what you should to do and know all the stuff you got to do and know. And You're pretty much just like treated like a guitar butler or some shit. It just shit sucks.
I mean, like it's the same thing with like the music industry as it was with like, I don't know, your local business that fired everybody the first second they heard that things would be shutting down, like didn't even try to keep people on for a second longer. It's like, well, you're dead weight. Get the fuck out of here.
Right.
And I can understand not wanting to go back to an industry that's going to treat you so fucking like you're disposable. I get it.
I mean, that's everybody in the music industry now. Everybody is disposable except the extreme peak. So I don't know what's left. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe this is where metal finally dies. We can all come together and just put that pillow on metal's face. Just all hands on deck. Let's just do it. Stop.
Well, before we do that, let's go ahead and look at some of the shit going on with the cream of the crop, the bands that will survive the nuclear apocalypse. Let's see what they're up to. I'd say the biggest thing that happened this week is that Iron Maiden, that band we all know and love, been together since 1947. They have a new single. The single is called "The Writing on the Wall." Have you heard this one?
Yeah, I gave it a listen. Like I was just like, I like played it on my phone while my phone sat in the toilet while I was in the shower, just to say I could listen to it. Just like barely heard it, and just like, okay, this is new Iron Maiden, right? You got a chorus that happens 4, 6, 8, 9 times in a song. This one was surprisingly short, though. Like, I have to give them props for keeping it at least a little short. It was like 7 minutes as opposed to fucking 17 minutes like they've been up to lately.
I was listening on my phone while I was out walking my dog, so I couldn't keep track of how long it was, but it felt like it was kind of dragging a bit, man.
Yeah, bloated.
Like it's a mid-paced song, and there's not like a lot going on. There's some good guitar work in there. You know, that's what you're supposed to expect from the band, right?
I would guess so, but I think before we started the show, we were saying Iron Maiden has been making music kind of like this since, God, it's been almost like 20 years now. Like when Bruce Dickinson rejoined the band, it's just been exactly like this, all of the albums.
So the last time I was like excited about new Iron Maiden music, like I've been excited about the concept of it, but the execution of it the last time I was like, yeah, that's pretty good, was probably like the Wicker Man in off Brave New World.
Yeah, I thought the Wicker Man was tight. I thought that was great.
That was in the year 2000.
But it's even the Wicker Man, it's still a very poppy song.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's super poppy, but at the same time, like what it was competing against in like the completely newified world, the brave new world of the year 2000, like it's pretty kick ass.
Yeah. I actually, when I was younger and I just wanted to absorb as much metal as possible, I bought the album. I think it was called Dance of Death.
Yeah.
It had historically the worst metal album cover to ever be made, where basically it's just a bunch of the exact same computer graphics effects as like the 90s internet dancing baby meme.
Yeah, I believe the album. Like the official word on that was that art was not finalized. They used like a work in progress and slapped it on a million units.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is kind of like an all-time graphic design fuck up if we're like judging it that way.
Yeah,
it wasn't meant to be as shitty as it is, I believe, is what the official word is on that years after the fact.
So like the graphic artist is on his Mac and he's got albumcover.png and albumcover1.png. He probably just put the wrong thing in the wrong email attachment, and that's how
he was looking for the one that had 7 finals written in.
Yeah. Oops.
But you know, happens to the best of us.
God knows I've probably sent you like a show I didn't finish before or something. I try to listen to them back after I'm done, but who knows? There could be like this show could have half of its audio missing.
Man, like, doing shit on the computer, nothing's ever done. You just gotta, like, say, okay, whatever, this is good enough. And that's fine, you know? Yeah. I will say with this new track, this is just, you know, what it sounded like to my ears. I don't know about you, but Bruce sounds old as fuck, man.
He does sound old. He sounds very raspy and throaty. He sounds like he's been doing this too long. It gave it an edge that I've kind of liked, honestly, but it just doesn't really, the song isn't enough for me to just call it something that I would keep spinning over and over again.
I do think it's notable. I think on the artwork that I saw for this, I don't know what's going to be finalized or what, but Eddie continues the grand English tradition of imperialism. This time he's dressed up like a samurai.
Oh, good. Thank God. Yeah, and that I think the last album they made was Book of Souls, which I read somewhere came out 6 years ago. How is that possible?
That can't be right. That really can't, man.
I feel like this show hasn't existed for 6 years, and that definitely came out when we were doing the show.
Definitely.
Let me Google this, because somebody said, I swear to God, it's been 6 years since Book of Souls was released. Someone in Discord had said that they loudly appreciate it when I search for things frantically on Google with the mechanical keyboard, so there you go.
Oh my God, 2015.
Dude, it's true, 2015.
I don't like that feeling, man. That feels very bad to me.
2015 was six entire years ago.
It's almost like time is slipping through my fingers and I'm looking at what I'm doing with it.
I don't understand, because I feel like in 2015 I was 32, and now in 2021 I'm 33. It just doesn't, something's not adding up. I feel like I'm not aging as rapidly as I should be.
I feel the exact opposite. Good. My bones are turning to dust as we speak here.
Yeah, I mean, if you want your time to go slower, if you want your hour, if you want to just feel every hour, listen to Iron Maiden. That shit is boring as fuck now, and the Book of Souls was no exception. Very boring, lame album. 2 out of 5 album.
I didn't make it all the way through Book of Souls because it was too fucking long.
92 minutes and 11 seconds. That's what I have in front of me.
I don't get me wrong on this. Like, I really love Iron Maiden. Like, some of my favorite records have come from this band. Some of my favorite songs have come from this band. It's just like, this is the way that this kind of business works. Like, you have to put in 20 years. You know, in the old days, it was 20 years. Now it's probably closer to 15. You put in 15 to 20 years of hard work, scrounging. You've got your highs, you've got your lows, you're living hand to mouth, and then you've done it. You've unlocked the secret to success, which is being a legacy band.
Right. You guys are a syndicated program now. You already had 100 episodes. We don't need any more. We're just going to play reruns forever, and we're happy with that.
And we all know, like, the same thing with TV syndications, where the real money is made. Yeah. Like, you want to get to that point. So it's kind of like pageantry. Like, you have to do this ceremony of releasing new music that you know is having ever-diminishing returns. But at the same time, you get a lot of people excited on the blogs and stuff like that. Like, yeah, they're putting out new music. That means that they're touring. That means that I'll go see them so I can watch them play the shit that, you know, and that I liked when I was young and remember what it was like to be young again.
But, like, I mean, don't we all just agree that there is a fast track to getting what we enjoy, which is just a tour with no album? You guys have, I mean, in terms of Iron Maiden, you have so much material. There's so much shit to listen to. There's a set list that could last 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 hours if they wanted to. If they just played the Book of Souls, my fucking back would hurt before they were done. Okay, so it makes no sense to me that they just have to feel like they have to keep putting out new material in order to coincide with the tour. You're Iron Maiden. You're going to have it in every single human being in Brazil at any show you play. Just fucking play your hits. You don't need to do it anymore.
I think it's if it were strictly a business decision, that would absolutely be the case. I think that a lot of the guys that are in these bands are like, I'm not over the hill. I can still write a good song. I don't want to rest on my laurels.
Is that true, though, hearing any of this? Like, have they been able to write a good song for as long as they've been old?
I liked Brave New World.
Yeah, but Brave New World, I mean, they were maybe getting up to a Silver Fox age. Now they're actually geriatric.
Yeah, it is tough to realize that was 21 years ago.
Right.
So I don't know. It's a dance that we have to do. We all have to go along with it. These are the established rules, and we have to grin and bear it and do the thing. I don't know. I guess that there are probably people out there that are legitimately excited and think that this is maybe some great work from the band, that this is going to, you know, join their discography ranking or whatever. I'm not that person.
No. And we find that whenever a band gets old like this and they're past their prime musically, it's like every single thing they put out pretty much sounds the same. There's really no major difference to be had after that fact. They somehow kind of settle into this formula, and it's not a good one. You saw the exact same thing happen with Slayer. The last five or six albums were all they were all fucking completely interchangeable. The same bad tone, the same shitty pace, same cringy lyrics, and Tom Araya doing his same fast lyric regurgitation bark. It was just that the last like dozen years of Slayer was not something they had to do.
This one's called Jesus Is a Duty.
Right.
And this kind of like it all fits very in line with you know, last week we were doing the David Ellison book, right? And he goes on a section where he's like, and you know, and then something happened. Like, we had our years where we were on top, we had our years where we were on bottom. I left the band, and then a couple years later, suddenly it was doing, you know, anniversary shows for albums, and it was doing reunited Big Four tours, and people were excited again. And that's when the money started pouring in again. That's when he was really making a living out on the road again. And that's just how this works. This is how the legacy economy plays out.
Yeah, we established with Dave Ellison that motherfucker just follows the money that could be found in any interaction he has with anybody, or had with anybody, and still probably has with anybody. I hope he's paying his lawyer well to deal with whatever the bullshit he's got to deal with, getting in contact with the cyber police to backtrace what he thinks he can.
I've never worried that a lawyer wasn't going to make their money.
Yeah,
but that actually like leads me to another thread here, talking about the legacy environment and segueing back over to Megadeth. I saw a couple of related stories. You know, Megadeth is doing the song and dance right now. They've got a new record that they're working on. They've got a big tour that they're going to embark on pretty soon. So they're in the same kind of headspace. The difference is that there was a little bit of controversy around the membership of Megadeth, which, if you listen to the show, and I know you do, we don't need to get into it anymore. But this story that popped up is very funny to me. It's actually extremely funny to me. Dave Mustaine, he joined Cameo. Again, everybody knows what Cameo is because we did some incredible work with Cameo on this show.
Our best to date.
So he joined Cameo, and people have been paying hundreds of dollars just to, you know, ask him ridiculous questions, which if you have spare money, and you know, like you've already given some to a food bank or whatever, this is the second best use of it.
Just bother old man Mustaine.
I love the idea of people just like, well, I worked overtime this week, so I got a fat paycheck. It's time to bother Dave Mustaine.
Make him record on his old cell phone for me.
Yeah.
It's like, how is this? Like, these guys are millionaires. They're fucking millionaires. How do they manage to record on like an 8-year-old iPhone with weird graphical glitches still and everything else in order to do these cameos?
I don't know, but it really, I think it's great. I think it's a nice, like, homey touch to somebody that, you know, otherwise is all rich and famous and stuff. It's like, oh, you're just like a confused grandpa. I can associate with that.
Confused grandpa is definitely the aesthetic of the day here. So something I found really interesting with Dave Mustaine's cameo is you pay him, and once the cash, the check clears, he'll say anything. So someone had the ingenious idea of paying money to get his further opinion on Dave Ellefson being no longer in the band. And he kind of already said his piece about that. But let me just find the clip, and you guys can take a listen to this.
I answer your question about Jason Newsted joining the band. I don't think that is going to happen. And any chance on Ellefson coming back later on? The answer to that is no. Any hints about the new album? Yeah, you can find out what I'm doing through my socials, through Cameo here, through GimmeMetal.com, my radio show, and also at Megadeth.com. And that's it.
Okay, so what we get is that we're definitely not getting Jason Newsted in the band. Like, I don't, it, from the sounds of it, Dave Mustaine probably just doesn't like him very much.
Same.
Yeah.
Just artistically, I'm sure that he's fine as a person. Don't quote me wrong on that.
What's the name of his band? Papa Wheelie or something?
Papa Wheelie.
Yeah, he's busy with that shit. He doesn't have any time for the second biggest thrash band of all time. So there's that. But he goes into the fact that, no, never again. Dave Ellefson will never, ever be in the band ever again. And I feel like you could really support that fact by the fact that these guys probably aren't that far away from dying.
I mean, it's not nice to say that, but yes.
That's not nice. You can't say that on podcasts. You guys are old as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, we've been with these bands for 40 years. Like, time has a way of destroying things, you know? It's just, that's how it is.
Right, it's like you're a 22, 23, 24-year-old dude when you started this shit. 40 years later, where does that leave you? Not that age anymore. Certainly not the age where it's appropriate to fuck around with 19-year-old girls, but we've been over that.
I mean, it's also like a lot of those early years you were riding as hard as you could go, like putting every single substance in your body, not sleeping, developing various debilitating addictions and stuff. Like, it's tough. The shelf life of Rockstar is, I guess, surprisingly long given what we know.
Ozzy's still here. He is still among us.
I'm knocking on wood right now, man. But yeah, so, you know, somebody paid money to do what maybe like Metal Sucks should have done for free.
Right. You just, I mean, artists are willing to talk about this stuff in interviews if you're a major enough publication to be worth talking to. We're not, which is why we've never had Dave Mustaine on the show. Plus, we make fun of him relentlessly, or at least I do. So that's probably not going to happen.
I don't see it happening anytime soon. But yeah, never say never.
Right. And like the last time we thought that somebody was too big for the britches that we found ourselves in, and there's no way he could have known we trashed him as much as we did. Jose Mangan called us out on it like immediately when we finally got our free cameo video from him.
He called us out for 10 minutes and I still, like, it's like the fucking Ark of the Covenant, man. I can't open that. I can't open that whole file without like just disintegrating.
Right. Because it reminds you that these people are human beings. Like, who knows? Dave Mustaine, he's an old man. He's on Twitter. He gets mad. Who knows if his name pops up or his face pops up in some Photoshop he doesn't like, and then he takes 10 minutes to listen. You just don't fucking know.
I'd like to believe he has better things to do, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe not. So let's go ahead and move to the next logical piece. Dave Ellefson is never coming back, you know, not after the whole rigmarole. So it seems like we found who the new guy is.
It's like, you know, a rumor based on Instagram photographs and internet sleuths. So,
and another cameo video with Dave Mustaine.
Yeah. So what's happening there? Do we have a name? Do we have a face? Do we think we know who it is?
So Dave Mustaine posted the headstock and top six frets of a bass, and people that are really into this kind of thing immediately figured out, like, I know that headstock.
Yeah, it's like an Ibanez BTB. Those things are mass produced. Anyone could have one.
Yeah, but like there's a demarcation on the top end. Is that like normal? I don't know, man. Like I don't fuck around with bases.
It is normal. Like I saw the picture and I'm like, that's just some guy with a BTB that has too many strings to play Megadeth. That's all I saw from that. But the speculation is that it belongs to a one Steve DiGiorgio, right?
And the unacceptable Italian.
Right. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorgio. And he's here trying to play some grooving Megadeth stuff. I feel like he was more famous for like the fretless stuff he did in the band Death.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. I mean, he's got some name power behind being who he is and the scene and things like that, but it's kind of an odd choice, if I had to say so.
It's a little odd. Again, I have no doubt that he's able to play this shit, though. Like, oh, okay, yeah, this guy was in Death. He can probably swing this one.
Yeah, if I can play Peace Cells after 10 minutes of tab practice, I'm sure he could too.
So, good for Steve DiGiorgio. That'll be a nice little payday for him.
Unless it's just like some random German guy, like it was that other time before Dave Ellison came back.
Oh right, yeah. Fuck, what was that guy's name?
I don't know, but he had like the most ridiculous, most expensive Warwick money could buy, because probably when he signed a contract with Megadeth, it was the first thing he did.
Bass is all the same, man. Just, yeah, fine. You just get what you need, five strings most. Like, get that. That's fine.
It doesn't matter if you buy a $100 one or a $10,000 one. You still will be inaudible in the mix. No one cares.
Yeah, you're plugging directly into the fucking stage sound. Like, you don't even need an amp. Like, you can buy like one fuzz pedal for one moment of one song, and that's it. Bass players and gear. I don't get it, man.
When I used to be in a band, they wanted me to play a certain part with a delay pedal, and I was playing it. And after practicing it so many times and listening back to it so many times, I was like, hey guys, I have an idea. Let's try this part on guitar. And then we did it. And then obviously it sounded infinitely way better. It's like, I'm not the kind of guy who needs a solo. I'm okay.
I have never once thought to put a delay on a bass. And maybe that's just my own, like, being creatively bankrupt or whatever. But, like, in my mind, that sounds like absolute shit.
It's just a frequency you really shouldn't fuck with that much. I think fretless bass is already too wacky. Like, it's already too goofy and too novelty for heavy metal, and guys do it all the fucking time.
Like, I really can't get into the tech death that the bass sounds like it's farting all the time. Like, I hate that.
I've said it many times on the internet. I don't think it sounds like farting. Specifically, I think it sounds like when you defeat a boss in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, stomping on that little turtle shell with Yoshi.
Yeah, fuck that guy. So,
all right, and the final piece here I'm going to connect with Megadeth, and I promise we'll never ever talk about Megadeth again until maybe
next week,
maybe until my birthday. Hatebreed is replacing In Flames on the tour that they're doing with Megadeth, Lamb of God, and Trivium. I gotta say here, I am probably going to go to the Austin date of this tour, and I like Megadeth. I saw them open up for Iron Maiden at the same venue a few years ago. I thought Megadeth was great. I wish that they had been louder, and I wish that they had played a longer set. That was my complaint with it. So, you know, I was like, of course I want to go see this.
I mean, Iron Maiden, Megadeth, I grew up with these bands. I like these bands. Yeah. We shit talk them all the time because now they're old and have the internet and they just won't shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And you know, Bruce is a fucking disgusting Tory nonce.
Absolute gammon of gammons. And I think this stupid festival he's blabbing on about is dumb, and it's going to be full with the dumbest people. Was it Balthazar's Feast or something?
Oh my God, that's what it is. Yeah, fucking Balthazar. Fuck you.
Grow
but
up.
We like these bands, okay? They were formative to us when we were young men.
And you see a lot of people talking shit about these bands. Metallica, Megadeth, Iron Maiden. Because y'all are a lot closer to 12 years old than I was, so...
I think it's important, though. Like, if you like something, you should be able to, like, say, like, objectively, this sucks.
I get that, too. But... I don't know. Sometimes I see takes where it's just they think there's a more respectable, influential band during that same time period. And it's never, ever, ever true.
Oh, my God. Like, dude, I don't the kind of revisionist idea that Exodus was a more important band than it is. Like, I can't deal with it.
It's like you guys have to understand that. OK, and maybe I'm missing something in terms of like the Exhorter Pantera discourse where Pantera just ripped them off. I don't know. Phil Anselmo didn't have YouTube back then. He wasn't just trolling around for music. It's possible these things could have been like parallel ideas. But I mean, like that kind of shit happened all the time. Like we saw the thing with Sarcophago being the first guys to wear corpse paint. Yeah. And there's actual evidence that Euronymous was like talking about how cool Sarcophago was before he started wearing corpse paint.
Yeah, they had like correspondence and shit. Like you can see their letters that they wrote to each other.
So you have some evidence there. But if that kind of like that back and forth doesn't exist, nobody is really ripping anybody off if shit is happening in the 80s and 90s or before that. So I don't know. I think the discourse is silly. And I think
the discourse is always silly.
Always silly.
Never lose sight of that. Don't get lost in the discourse.
Right. And Megadeth, Iron Maiden, those bands, they influenced your favorite shitty death metal band. That's just what happened. Those guys started playing Iron Maiden tabs when they were 15. That's why you have the music today that you have.
That's objectively true as well.
Right.
I say all this to say, like, I'm a little bit bummed that there is one band I really want to see on this tour. That's Megadeth, of course. And the other one that I was somewhat curious about, maybe halfway curious about, is off the bill now and replaced by fucking Hatebreed.
Yeah. I mean, In Flames I never really liked because I feel like they have more questionable material to me than they do really cool material.
Like I really dig like Horacle and the Jester's Race. Like I think those are great. Again, like I discovered those well after they were, you know, doing something else entirely.
It's like sad guy beanie metal.
God damn, very accurate.
I don't like it. Yeah, I don't think it's good. But yeah, Horacle, Jester's Race, those are seminal, very cool fucking albums. But Hatebreed you're not a fan of.
I'm over this shit, man. I'm so over this shit. I thought Hatebreed was kind of lame, even when I was listening to shit like Terror and Throwdown.
Yeah, like they're so hardcore in a can. Like they just don't seem to have that edge. They just have the formula.
I guess in the years since, Hatebreed has kind of been like that band that's probably going to be on the bill and it's like, whatever, like you'll watch Hatebreed, sit through it and go to the next one. Try not to have somebody knock over your beer. To a band that like I actively like strongly dislike. And I think part of that is just that I have beef with Jamie Josta.
Yeah, you two aren't fans of each other, right?
I mean, like, he probably doesn't know who I am. Like, I would almost be certain that he's not keeping tabs of his haters or anything like that, you know?
I don't know, man. You should read his lyrics. But, yeah, I mean, hasn't he blocked you? Haven't I seen that screenshot? Am I thinking of someone else?
I don't know. I'm really, really not nearly as bad online as I used to be. Like I try to be good now.
Yeah.
So I haven't been blocked by anybody in a while. I don't think, unless, you know, I'm not seeing the blocks, whatever. I'm above it. I'm floating on a cloud of enlightenment above the discourse.
Perfect. So speaking of Twitter and reasons that Jamie Josta could block you for takes that you would openly disagree with him about. He got on his phone. He took his one good thumb and picked up his iPhone, and he tweeted a little gem, as far as I recall, right?
Yeah, and oh boy, we're about to get into it. So, you know, buckle up and all of that.
Fuck, do we have to?
Yeah, we have to. I'm sorry. All right, let me go ahead and quote Jamie Josta here. He tweeted this out 2 days ago, and it's still up, so there you go. The bravery of the Cuban people to stand up to their brutal oppressors is amazing and inspiring, and I hope that they can finally get the freedom, resources, and human rights they deserve. Hashtag SOS Cuba. Now, I don't blame anyone if they try to tune out the latest conversation around what's happening around the world in terms of kind of a blinkered view of how things happen in other countries. But this SOS Cuba hashtag that's popped up in the recent week, I guess, is one of the biggest loads of horseshit I think I've ever seen online. Okay, don't get me wrong. Like, the situation in Cuba is that people really can't get enough of what they need. Like, there has been a massive embargo in place by the United States that prevents people from getting, you know, basic resources. It cripples the economy. Like, it makes people poorer than they need to be. And it's again, like, a huge travesty that the United States has been able to perpetrate this upon Cuba for so long. And it's also incredibly inspiring to me that Cuba has continued to operate as a country and still provide for their people, even with the extremely meager resources that they have. You know, when I went to Cuba a few years ago, it was really an incredible place, and that I don't know if there's another place in the world quite like it. I was able to chat with a lot of Cuban residents there who were, you know, telling me, like, how life goes there. And really, they're smarter than you and I are. They have a higher literacy rate than the U.S. They've got longer life expectancy. Their medical care is absolutely some of the best in the world, despite the fact that they are a very, very poor country. They provide the basic things that a citizen needs in Cuba, which they have ration books for food, for milk, for, you know, toiletries, like, and also cigars and rum, because hell yeah, brother.
Sick.
And so when I saw, like, a group of maybe a loose collection of a couple hundred people demanding a very, I would say, red flag word of democracy, all of my bullshit receptors went up at once. And I think they were right to do so, because it seems like U.S. media has completely run with this. Pretending that there is a nationwide revolt against the Cuban government, and that is simply not the case. You have people that are unhappy with their situations, and some of them may have joined the protest, but you also have what is certainly like a color revolution type situation where people are chanting about democracy again. What the fuck does that mean? that's a please invade me weasel word.
It's time to save the Cuban people from not capitalism.
Yeah, that's what it is. The United States would love nothing more than to basically extract every resource that Cuba has and use it as a vassal state, the same way that it does, you know, so many other poor countries across the world. We want what you have. What's yours is ours.
Yeah, that's what trade is. More for me, less for you, in terms of the United States, or else. But
so, seeing people posting the SOS Cuba hashtag, you're seeing a wide swath of pigs. A bunch of Miami Proud Boys are fully behind this. The last I saw, they were planning on getting on some recreational boats and going to Cuba with their fucking small arms and taking over the country, which I hope they make it there.
Please, motherfuckers, go there. Go get your go get your fucking Bushmaster and think you're going to do something.
Yeah, I think one of the funniest things I've ever seen is those like those mercenaries that were trying to invade Venezuela who were captured by Venezuelan fishermen who were like actually pissing their pants on camera.
I can only expect the same. This isn't just like a fist fight where you get to go on the street and punch a girl with black block on her shirt. Nope, this is a little different. So sorry, guys. We'll see. We'll see you when we see you.
Yeah. So I think that the most notable thing, what would tell you what you need to know about this kind of thing is if you're looking through the SOS hashtag, you're seeing just like bloodthirsty right wingers that are like, I can't wait to liberate Cuba.
Yeah, like definitely bald eagle avatar types are the ones who are all parroting this nonsense. This is the problem with metal dudes on the internet is that we have like a bunch of edgy alcoholics who think that their opinion needs to be heard, always sharing it.
That does describe me, to be fair, though.
Yeah. Same.
But it's okay though, because you know it's the discourse and it's all right. So Jamie Jassa, like I'd say, you know, primarily my biggest criticism of this fella is that he is desperate to get away from Hatebreed and be a celebrity. That seems to be his biggest goal. He would love to be Joe Rogan, essentially. And he is very slimy in the way that he is kind of fame-balling to be that way. He has been for a long time. I think one of the biggest red flags of that, and this has been memory hold for so long, like I almost forgot about it myself. Do you know who Dan Patrick is?
Dan Patrick?
Yeah.
In what context? I know 4 million Dan Patricks.
So the Dan Patrick that I'm thinking of, he was a former like right wing shot jock, like radio guy, you know, very much in the vein of like Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Before that, he was a Houston area sportscaster, and he had developed a chain of sports bars before they all completely went belly up, and he rebranded as like a hard right winger. And then a few years ago, he became the lieutenant governor of Texas. And it's not a great situation to be in if you're a Texan, because, you know, all of these people are just the absolute fucking worst. But while he was still doing his radio show, it was Jamie Josta that created some music for it.
Oh, no.
That was in the years, again, Dan Patrick had long left sports behind, and he was, you know, surely going on 2013. What was he going on about? Like caravans of immigrants, Obama being born in Kenya, like, you know, just what was the discourse of the day back then? It wasn't hidden. It was well known. But Jamie Josta is either such a fucking fame ball or hard right enough that he went ahead and helped his show out.
Yikes, man. I mean, like, the thing about Jamie Josta in trying to brand himself as anything but the frontman of Hatebreed is that he's not that smart. He's not that well spoken, and he's not that charismatic. He seems to like to think he is, and he does have like a lot of support from people that are just fans of his band, like right. Anybody from that sort of situation. But nobody is listening to Jamie Josta, just the podcaster. It's all about, oh, hey, let's go hear Hatebreed guy's podcast, or let's go hear Hatebreed guy's opinion. It just doesn't seem to really go much any other way for him. He's got no way to move away from it. So
yeah, he's been pigeonholed, and he's trying desperately to get out, and it's just not, is it working? Is it not? I don't know. Jamie Josta's show probably gets more listeners than ours, but the quality is, even our paltry quality is head and shoulders above it.
It's like equivalent at best. At best. He is just as charismatic as I am. I'm just some dummy from New England like he is. I have just as much mush mouth problems trying to be on a microphone, and I'm just as upbeat and funny as Jamie Josta. So,
but you know what you have over him?
A soul.
A full head of hair.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, I also got two thumbs up for myself.
Anyway, that's just, this is stuck in McCraw, man. Like, I saw Mr. Worldwide Pitbull was going all in on we need to go ahead and bring capitalism to Cuba. I don't like it. I think that our current slate of celebrities speaking out on geopolitical events is, I mean, I guess it's on par for the United States, but it's embarrassing, man. It's embarrassing.
I mean, I think them driving all those classic cars is cool. I don't know.
It is desperately cool, especially knowing that those things have like 500,000 miles on them, if not more.
Yeah, well, they like reverse engineered all the parts to just make replacement parts and just keep those cars running.
Absolutely. Like I rode all like pretty much the length of the island in God, I'm trying to remember. It was an old ass Soviet vehicle that had been pimped out. Like this thing had more than 1,000,000 miles on it, but it was still going strong. It's badass, man. It's extremely badass, and it shows like how incredibly resilient people can be when they have to be, essentially.
Right, because and it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition to put against us, where we always got to have the new shiny thing, and here's Cuba proving like, oh hey, you could have kept your car running for 60 years, guys.
Yeah, it makes me feel incredibly lazy and stupid.
Well. We have any other news you want to discuss?
I mean, we have a few things that we could get on though. But don't let me get in the way. What's on your mind?
So we have, and I think we brought this up very briefly in another episode, but, we've kind of gloated a little bit about the fact that we called a very obvious thing that was going to occur with the band Dev Heaven. Right. So
right.
On their most recent album before this latest one that's going to be released in August, George Clark had performed a clean vocal duet with Chelsea Wolfe. And I called the fact that Def Heaven would probably eventually start doing some clean singing albums before that happened. And when that happened, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this is real now. It's definitely going to happen. And of course, fast forward to the last couple weeks, they started putting out new songs from their or new singles from their latest album. So we now see that they're really just going to stick to clean vocals this entire album. And a lot of what's been going around the news is people got to be asking this guy why he's doing it, as if just switching it up isn't enough. Like, you got to just, if you're a metal dude, you have to grill everybody for doing something a little different than what they always do. We've seen it with bands like Mastodon, who put out, if you listen to a Mastodon album now versus like Remission, it just might as well be two completely different bands. And
yeah, and people won't stop telling Mastodon like, please do the old stuff, and they're like, no, we did the old stuff, we're gonna do something else.
Right, and Mastodon's actually doing very well. I think this Def Heaven music is good. But I don't think it's going to do as well as, say, like New Bermuda, and certainly not Sunbather.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think that this has a mass appeal. I think that it's, I don't want to say it's an attempt at that. But you'll see things like, do you remember a couple years ago when Votnet Viscar switched over to just becoming Votnet, and they tried to do clean vocals, and the album was, at least in terms of like streams and sales, kind of a flop?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, like not as many people cared as they did about what was it called, Voyager or Traveler or something, the one they had before that. People were stoked about that album, and I mean, as stoked as you can get about underground metal, that thing had a lot of passing around. It was in a lot of year-end lists. The other albums after the fact, they were clean, not so much. And so Def Heaven's fans have always been into that particular sound that Def Heaven has to offer. And I think that because it's such a niche audience, that it's not going to go over quite as well.
See, I think I'm coming at this from the opposite direction, where I think that no band that came from like underground metal in the modern sense has as much reach as Deafheaven does, where that if they fart on a tape, like NPR will premiere it.
You could be right about that. I mean, you look at a band like Bring Me the Horizon, and those guys are fucking millionaires now. They have adjusted their sound and their style to every current generation of 14-year-old girls and what they want, album to album to album. So they've remained so cool and so relevant that they are now living in like mansions and beachside boroughs and shit.
I think honestly, the way that you're looking at this though is like if we're comparing a band like Bring Me the Horizon and Deafheaven, what you're looking at is essentially new kids on the block versus AOR, like adult contemporary Bryan Adams.
You think so? Like,
I think that the audience for Deafheaven skews a little bit older and a little bit more like NPR tote bag type than, say, Bring Me the Horizon. Like, I have no doubt that Bring Me the Horizon is making more money than Deafheaven, but they don't have the same kind of like adult appeal.
I think that's fair. I think that also when you have a band like Deafheaven and the listeners they have, we can admit that it is the Pitchfork crowd, evident by the fact that the quote I'm about to share is from a Pitchfork article. So I'm kind of more the Pitchfork crowd. I listen to bands like Nothing, et cetera, Microwave, all that stuff. So like I'm into stuff that's kind of that reverby hardcore, not actually shoegaze, that people call shoegaze. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Bands like Hundredth that used to be a hardcore band, and they decided, hey, let's buy a fucking TC Electronic Hall of Fame and do something different.
It's a great pedal. Great pedal.
Sick pedal. Buy that. Don't buy the mini one, please. The one knob, not good enough. Get the full.
Yeah,
no,
you need all of those options. The church reverb setting is the one I keep it on. It's nice.
Get the full shebang, you know? So they were asking George Clark Pitchfork about why he changed. And so I'm going to read a couple white guy writing paragraphs from George Clark here in his response. George responds, "So much trying and failing. It was all an attempt to be as maximum as possible so people didn't feel that they were lacking in a listening experience just because the vocals had changed so dramatically. My singing on earlier records was really haphazard. This felt a lot more calculated. I don't view myself as a natural singer at all. It has taken a lot of work. It's funny, even though I'm not using my voice in nearly as extreme a way as I usually do, I would often be exhausted at the end of the day. It was like learning a different instrument. It made the whole thing a lot more fun, to be honest with you. Maybe around New Bermuda, I felt like everyone was expanding on their instrument and getting better at what they were doing. And in certain ways, I was as well. But there's a part of me that always felt like the weak musical link. I wanted to bring more to the table. And also to service the lyrics differently. It's interesting for the song that we put out. So many people have been commenting to me about the lyrics, which is very kind. It's something I didn't get a lot of before, even though I've taken the small amount of time on those lyrics. It's just that the delivery is so much friendlier. There are all these little things that are personally satisfying about the switch, and that personal satisfaction was the reason we did it in the first place, you know? And I think that's an interesting take, is that clean vocals are friendlier. Like, we take a frame like mass appeal, and it's a term that's just so ostracized in metal music particularly. Like, mass appeal is bad to all the guys in denim jackets. It's just, no, yeah. Pop music, no.
The moment you put harsh vocals on a track, though, you've alienated a mass section of listeners.
Right, and I think it's a really interesting take to say that what he's doing is friendlier. Like, he's actually making an attempt to connect with people. And I think that that's kind of the elephant in the room when it comes to mass appeal, is that if your music connects with more people are going to listen to it, and yeah, in turn you're going to be more famous and make more money, but it might not necessarily be the result of some kind of like pop machine formula.
I totally get what he's saying though, like hearing everyone around you and your band getting better at their instrument and you're just like, okay, well I can do a one note shriek here, I have to do better.
Right. And that was the thing about corrupt, ordinary corrupt human love, or I'm never going to get those correct in the right order. But I listened to that and it was kind of like New Bermuda, the sequel. It was just more of the same. And a lot of that had to do with the vocals. It was just very, very samey. Obviously, you had the track with Chelsea Wolfe that was very different, but for most part, the songs that I really liked on it were the same kind of vibe. And I thought about putting it on my year-end list, but I ultimately didn't because I just didn't think it was that like outstanding to me. So maybe this will be on my year-end list. Maybe this is going to be an incredible album. I think the two songs that came out have been really good, so I'm interested to hear more.
I, too, am interested to hear more. But, yeah, I like the way that he's described this whole process. Like, singing is hard. Like, that's a reason why metal dudes don't do it that often. It's hard, and it's an embarrassing process when you're trying your best to hit notes in a studio while you've got all these cool instruments around you. You hear your voice coming back on the playthrough. It's like, fuck, this is the most humiliating experience of my life.
Yeah, and I've gotten into it with guys who listen to death metal before, because I've talked about how, well, being a guy who was more into stuff like power metal and things like that, I always thought that, you know, a guy who can really belt, who can really sing and can hit all the notes, that takes a lot more talent. It takes a lot more discipline than just growling. And then people always hit me back with, well, do you have any idea how hard it is on a voice to growl? It's like, man, like death metal growling is a bodily talent so far as armpit farting is. You know, it's just not.
God, that is so accurate. Like anybody can, literally anybody can do it. Not everybody has a good singing voice. Like even if you take lessons, if you learn about pitch, if you learn how to hit notes, like it has to do with the natural resonance of your body. And some people have a good one and some people it's not so nice. It's mine.
Right. And it's just one of those things where naturally, it's exactly what you said. It's all I want to parrot, is that just naturally some people can have an easier time do it. Everybody can learn, I think, to an extent.
Absolutely. Everybody can learn. It's just that at some point, like that natural resonance is going to be like the deciding factor of like, is this something that other people are going to enjoy listening to?
Right. And I feel like the only thing missing for me being a talented vocalist is that I didn't sing at church. I just feel like so many people who started out got started singing at church. And I think I wanted to when I was really young, but I just didn't do it. And it's like one of my dumb 8-year-old kid regrets.
I didn't want to sing in church either. I decided that like I played guitar in the church band, right? Because I didn't want to have to sing because singing was embarrassing, right?
I'm always a pick me. I'm always a want to be the center of attention, but feel like I'm too ugly to be at the same time. Like I'm always in this horrible war with myself over that. I've always wanted to be able to sing and be a front man and maybe have that going for myself. But I've tried singing. Like I went on like udemy.com to just like look up singing lessons and stuff, pay a couple bucks, see what's what, see what I can do to get better.
Yeah,
it's not happening.
No,
I don't think so.
Like, what's holding you back?
I'm bad at it.
Yeah,
I don't like being bad at things. I'm too impatient.
I too am. Like, I've been trying to like, you know, put out like this ridiculous record for a while, and every time it comes down to record vocals for it, I'm like, this is a deeply embarrassing process and I don't like what I'm hearing and I don't think I'm ever going to put anything out simply because this is the thing holding me back. And that is the stumbling block of like almost every band, unless you're an instrumental band, in which case you can bypass this whole rigmarole.
Right. And I think what set it off for me was I did that cover of the Iced Earth song where I changed the lyrics up and my wife was just like, damn, I think you can really sing. And so I was like, well, fuck, maybe I'll get into it. Maybe I'll try. And then I did some of the training for a little bit. And then I tried to sing the Killswitch Engage cover. And Howard is a fucking demon, man. That guy's incredible. And just trying to come anywhere close to him, it was just listening back to it. I probably re-recorded every take 1,000 times, and it was still bad. It's just one of those things where, I don't know, it would take a lot more work for me So I'll keep at it, if just for fun, but I don't think I'm going to come out of it without white hair at the end of it. So
it's a thing that really we should have gotten started on much, much earlier.
Yeah. Everything we do is kind of that same thing.
And I guess being in metal, it's something that people try to avoid. Like, singing well is something that people try to avoid. They want to instead focus on, there's no other genre where you can just put a pitch shifter on your voice and call it a fucking day. Like, you don't have to know anything.
I'm big. I have tattoos. I have a beard. I'm a guy who can flail around and act ridiculous. I could start a grindcore band as the frontman right now. I could do it, but it's just not what I wanted to do. So
we will do better. Hey, by the way, like, since Jordan's not on this one, we've got like maybe a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
Nothing but gear and weed talk.
Yeah. Right. So TC Electronic Hall of Fame reverb pedal. They should just call that genre of music we're talking about Hall of Fame.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I've talked a lot of musicians that you know and love. That's the one reverb pedal. It's the only one you need. Yeah. There are 10 million pedals you could buy, but that one's cheap and it sounds great. So get that one.
I mean, that's what Nej from Alcest plays.
Fuck. Do you need further proof?
And that's all he, like, if you look at Nej's pedal board, it's minimal. That guy doesn't have, like, you would think it was like an ocean of stomp boxes. It's not. He uses like one of those little pedal trains. It's got the Boss Digital Delay. It's got the Hall of Fame reverb. And then you probably have like an OCD and maybe, of course, tuner and like an equalizer probably. And that's it. It's like five or six pedals. It's not that much.
The pedal market is absolutely fully silly. I was watching, cause I never do this. I was watching a guy on YouTube talk about gear and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever watched the JHS pedal guy.
I was just about to bring up his fucking eyebrowless face. Yes.
He makes good videos. I don't typically watch this kind of thing. I'm not typically interested in that kind of thing, but he is very, very knowledgeable because he's been building pedals for so long. And the truth of it is there are like eight different kinds of pedals you can get.
Right.
Like maybe eight. A couple of those are variations on the same.
Yeah.
And then a thousand and a half variations of those same pedals. Like it's making this huge mountain out of what is a molehill.
So much so, because most of the pedals that, what's his name? The JHS guy.
I think he's just, I don't know his name. JHS guy is what I'm
okay.
going
to go with. So JHS guy, the thing about him is he likes to showcase really cheap pedals. He's like, oh, you're on a budget. Try these out. I think they sound like this is a clone of so-and-so pedal that costs $200 more. And it sounds the same. It sounds fucking the same. You're gonna have so many chodes in the comment section being like, oh, it lacks the warmth of the true Big Pie Big Muff. It's like, no it doesn't. No it doesn't. You put that shit in a mix and no one will hear it.
I watched the video he did where he was comparing various Behringer pedals to the more expensive counterparts, and that one was outstanding because you can get those Behringer pedals for like $40.
Yeah, it used to be $20, but now the marketplace is just inflated to fuck. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why people are as pedal crazy as they are.
I think it's directly related to what we were talking about with singing, man. Like, it is hard to develop yourself and get your own like sound on the guitar. Like, it's hard to develop your skills over the years and be competent to do various things on the guitar. And a pedal is a nice distraction.
it's a wonderful distraction.
When I was in college, I was taking a Spanish class. And this is one of the strangest encounters I ever had in academia. In that I had gotten into a big, loud argument with, I guess this says a lot about me. I had gotten into a big, loud argument with this fucking right-wing chud in class who was talking about Cuba specifically. because we were learning like you know, bits of Cuban history in between, like learning conjugations and stuff like that. And he was saying that, you know, that essentially communism is killing, you know, 10 billion people or whatever. And I lost it on him in the middle of class. I've never done that in my life. I've never done it since then. So essentially I had to go have a meeting with the professor. The professor was playing the classical guitar in front of me. He was like, you know, he had his fingernails like all sharpened and pointed. He was playing absolutely beautifully and absolutely cleanly. And he was like, "I've seen the work that you turn in. I know that, you know, you've mentioned that you play guitar as well. I bet you turn the gain up all the way, right? I bet you have a whole lot of pedals so you cover up your individual mistakes, right?" And I've never felt like so completely cored out. Somebody talking directly to me and my character and how I live my life and completely tearing me down.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, so anyway, but you have creepy fingernails, so fuck you.
I later saw him a couple of years later at a classical guitar showcase in a church. And he was very nice and friendly to me, and he was excited that I was learning more about how guitar should be played.
Great. Yeah. That's another thing, is that when it comes to playing guitar, I've been trying to branch out as much as possible. Metal music is the easiest genre to play on guitar.
And
I think it's time to fucking just admit that to everybody. It's the easiest. It's the finger placement is fucking power chords or palm mutes, and that's it. I mean, even if you want to do shredding, like, speed is probably one of the easiest things you can practice on guitar.
I don't disagree with that. At the same time, like, I have a hard time keeping up, like, you know, 30-second notes or whatever. Like, my right hand does not want to cooperate with that.
Yeah, but it's like I'm always trying to play these, like, I don't know, big black-rimmed glasses indie chords, and I'm just like, oh, fuck! Oh, my fingers don't go. Fuck, I give up. Like, I'm trying to play Weezer, and I feel that way. But it's like, if I look up any major metal song, I could probably take some time and figure it out. I'm not saying I can do, like, a fucking Kirk Hammett solo tomorrow, but the riffing part, probably.
I actually disagree with the Kirk Hammett. I think you probably could pretty easily play Kirk Hammett solos. I listened back to some of the material I've recorded on my computer. I'm like, fuck, that was a ripoff of a Kirk Hammett solo.
And one time some guy in high school told me this. He's like, metal is like the easiest genre to play in guitar. And I remember being so mad. I was so angry because this was around the time when, like, Winter Sun's first album was out and Dragon Force was just kind of putting stuff out, and I was just like, how dare you? You don't know enough of what you speak. And it's just, it fucking is. Like, I hear some of that Midwest emo shit those guys do with capos and stuff. Forget it. It's like, it's way better.
The capo is underappreciated in how it changes the entire nature of the guitar. Like, that is... it's cheating, taken to the max. You buy yourself a capo. It's the best thing you can buy for a guitar, except for, like, a tuner.
Yeah, right. You need a tuner. You need a capo, even if it's electric. Even if you have a classic fucking electric guitar that's just regular, you're not an acoustic player, I still think people should buy a capo just to fuck around with some of those chords.
And I've been playing around with a capo on my baritone guitar. It's absolutely opened up all kinds of sonic possibilities. I feel like a brand new man. And then I play something and I'm like, I wish I could sing over that.
Right. And so I'm trying to branch out because I don't know if metal music is what I want to play anymore, if I do ever play in a band again. And I'm just getting myself frustrated. I keep just like having these tantrums where I just like riff really fast and crank the gain all the way up and put a delay pedal on it and just go, nah! And then I just fucking, that's my day. And then we'll run away and then don't touch the guitar for 7 weeks. So, I don't know, man. I've had this orange rocker verb and 2x12 sitting in my room for probably a year and a half untouched because it's fucking loud and giant, and I bought it to put pictures on Instagram, and I only play my Line 6 Helix now.
Yeah, I sold my orange amp, and I just play exclusively through this Spark amp that you got me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't need that giant fucking tube amp anymore. This thing is everything I need.
It really is. Like, if you get some kind of modeling practice set up when you're at home, that's fucking it. Like, that's all you ever need. You're going to be wasting your time if you think that it's cool to play your fucking 100-watt 6505 in the garage or something. No one wants to hear that. It's like, you really can't practice with something like that.
I guess this is the one piece of, like, musical advice that I heard all the time when I was young and totally discounted, but I get it now. Like, you will waste all your time with doodads and saving up for the next big thing when you could just, like, get the simplest solution and just play.
Really? Honestly, some of the best guitarists I know have bullshit gear. They just have just, like, why don't you get something that's, like, not a fucking $300 Bugera amp? Like, why are you doing it? Just, but it, none of that shit matters. As long as it works and it plays what he's playing, it's just, it's fine. Like, I have this friend who, he bought, like, a Fender Champion, like, 2x12 combo. And
he, I had, like, one of those when I was young. It sounded really good, actually.
He, like, got in there electronically and rerouted it, so all he had was the speakers, and he, like, hooked that up to some cheap, awful, mostly solid state Randall with, like, a, you know, and it's just like, that's what he plays, and he's, like, taking it to shows and stuff, and I'm
that, that is ugly as fuck. I can
I'm
see it
fucking
in my mind.
Horrified.
It's horrifying.
It's like, I don't even know who. I think it's, oh man, who's the, I think it's like fucking Gus Paul's signature from a dozen years ago that he's stopped playing forever. It's just like some random, one of the 400 Aussie guitarists or something. Just playing this awful Randall.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, whatever. It works. It's cheap. Gets it done. Spend more time playing than you do looking at gear.
Yeah, it's like I'm over here in the crowd, like, judging this guy for his Line 6 Spider, but here I am in the crowd and he's fucking riffing his heart out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Shit sucks, man. It's not good. So how do I cope? I cope with marijuana. Let's talk weed for a bit.
Oh, man, I've been doing weed lately. It's good.
You've been doing... You don't do weed. You smoke it.
No. Here's the thing. Here's what I learned. I was always afraid to take edibles. I'm like, I can't control how much of that shit's going in there or whatever. But you absolutely can. Yeah.
Just don't eat too much. Start small.
So wait, when did they make weed legal in Massachusetts?
Oh, geez, maybe like 3 years ago, I think, like 2019.
I kind of want that now. I kind of want to have that, like, easily buyable and various milligram strengths, like, over the counter of some nice hippie.
That's literally where we were yesterday. You just go there and they tell you all about the different fruity flavors of all the gummies you can get or the chocolates. And pre-rolls are fucking awesome. You pay too much for them, but it's just so great to just fucking take one out of a little plastic cylinder like it's a cigarette and just have at it. I'm terrible at rolling papers. I'm fucking awful at it.
It's a lost art because machines do them for you now.
Right. And like, if ever I try to do it, it looks like what you would do with, like, the straw paper at a restaurant when you were a kid and bored. Like, it just looks terrible when I try. I can't do it. So, you know, they do it for me and I'll pay. Dude, it's honestly like $15 a joint. It's too expensive.
That is way too expensive. Also, like, way back in the day with the shitty stems and seeds filled weed that I would get, like, you know, you were lucky if the one that I handed you would stay together halfway.
Right. You'd have to relight it, rewrap it. You'd take your pen cap and you'd stick it in there. It's no fun.
In the meantime, I'm just slobbering all over it.
So what's cool is you can get the vape, right? That's,
yeah,
they got vape weed pens now. That shit's pretty tight because you can just fucking chill in your apartment and just, like, smoke and watch TV.
I guess what I'm saying here is, like, I'm calling on any of our listeners that live in Colorado, Massachusetts, California, New Jersey.
Yeah. Not New York yet.
Illinois. Probably some other states, like
Alaska. I don't know.
I think so, actually. Send me weed. That's what I'm asking here.
Right. It's pretty pungent, but I could probably get away with some gummies for you. You'll get some.
Yeah, I'm looking for you know, brave listeners willing to commit you know, felonies. Yeah, to send old Joe some light strength gummies.
Total federal crime. So That's it for Gear and Weed Talk. I think that should just be a show we start. Like, we just start a whole separate show that's that.
I mean, I'm a little bit concerned, though, because you and I, we're on the same page right now. Like, we've offloaded a lot of our gear that we've acquired over the years, and we're coming around on maybe we don't need all this shit because we certainly haven't accomplished anything with it.
but we could accomplish a podcast with it, and we could just talk about gear, and people will send us gear to fucking plug in, and we can talk about the gear and play samples. You know, dude, it'd be a sick show. I wouldn't listen to it, but I bet people would.
I'm just imagining like getting a test of a dozen different pedals and playing the intro to Enter Sandman over and over again on a podcast to hear what different pedals sound like.
Yeah, that should be how everything is. We'll let you guys go. Thanks for listening, and keep it metal, and keep it here on the show. Listen to all our other episodes. It's great. Also, check us out on Patreon. Google Patreon and Toilet of Hell. That's OV instead of OF. You know, you get some bonus shows where sometimes we have even more fun than we do on the regular shows. So check it out. Thank you much.
With the Patreon shows, it's either like I do a bunch of work to set something up, or we literally have nothing. And I feel like either one of those is our best shows, having right. No material or having nothing but material.
It's really just how it should be. So, all right. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week. Later.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.